Welcome to OncLive On Air. I'm your host today, Megan Hollish. OncLive On Air is a podcast from OncLive, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, OncLive covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Genentech, we had the pleasure of speaking with Peter Schmid, MD, PhD, FRCP. Dr. Schmid is the chair of cancer medicine, a professor of cancer medicine, and the center lead of the Center of Experimental Cancer Medicine at Barts Cancer Institute of Queen Mary University in London, England. He is also the clinical director of Barts Breast Cancer Center at St. Bartholomew's Hospital. Data from the 2023 San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium included the Phase 3 HER2CLIMB-02 trial findings, which revealed that the median time to disease progression or death was 9.5 months, for patients with advanced or metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer who were treated with trastuzumab emtansine plus tucatinib, compared with 7.4 months for patients given T-DM1 plus placebo. Tucatinib plus T-DM1 reduced the risk of disease progression or death by 24%. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Schmid discussed considerations for applying recent data updates in HER2-positive breast cancer management to clinical practice and detailed how he treats patients with HER2-positive disease in different settings. How do you determine whether patients with HER2-positive early breast cancer should receive perioperative systemic therapy or proceed directly to surgery?
Well, patients with stage 2 or stage 3 HER2-positive early breast cancer, it's very clear the standard of care is preoperative systemic therapy, chemotherapy in combination with dual HER2 blockade, followed by surgery, and then postoperative, either further chemotherapy or further HER2-targeted therapy or a combination. In patients with stage 1 HER2-positive breast cancer, the situation is slightly less clear, and I think either option is possible, primary surgery or primary systemic therapy. I think increasingly more clinicians are choosing primary chemotherapy in combination with HER2-targeted therapy for patients with T1CN0 disease, whereas with T1A or T1B disease, usually primary surgery is chosen first.
For patients who are eligible for perioperative systemic therapy, how do you choose between the available treatment options?
So for patients who can receive neoadjuvant chemotherapy, if patients have stage 2 or stage 3 disease, so which means a tumor size of 2 centimeters or larger, axillary lymph node involvement, they should really be considered for chemotherapy in combination with dual HER2 blockades, which is trastuzumab and pertuzumab. In patients with stage 1 disease, it is less clear, and the data are probably most supportive of just single agent HER2 blockade, although some investigators would also choose in patients with T1CN0 disease, for example, a taxane-based therapy in combination with the dual HER2 blockade. Ultimately, the chemotherapy backbone is probably where we may make most changes. In patients with relatively low-risk disease, for example, stage 1 disease, it is entirely reasonable to consider initially just 12 weeks of a taxane-based therapy in combination with dual or single HER2 blockade, whereas in patients with stage 2 or stage 3 disease, we would either use an anthracycline taxane sequential regimen or a combination of a platinum and taxane agent.
What is the standard of care for HER2-positive early breast cancer?
The standard of care for HER2-positive early breast cancer is really stage-dependent. In patients with stage 2 or stage 3 early HER2-positive breast cancer, it would usually be preoperative chemotherapy in combination with dual HER2 blockade. There's a number of chemotherapy regimens that are used, anthracycline-containing and anthracycline-free. Patients would then have surgery. After surgery, there would be a decision on how the HER2-targeted therapy is continued. In patients who have a complete pathological response and who had no lymph node involvement initially, they would only continue on trastuzumab. In patients who have a complete pathological response but had initially lymph node involvement, we would continue with dual HER2 blockade with trastuzumab, pertuzumab for the rest of a year. In patients who have residual disease, we would consider treatment with T-DM1 according to the Catherine trial. In patients with stage 1 disease, the standard of care is slightly less clear. It's ultimately a surgery and either before chemotherapy and HER2 blockade or afterwards chemotherapy and HER2 blockade. Most people would probably consider a slightly lighter chemotherapy regimen, for example, 12 weeks of weekly paclitaxel, either with just trastuzumab or trastuzumab and pertuzumab. The postoperative treatment options are then again dependent on the response if patients receive neoadjuvant therapy.
What clinical trial findings support the use of adjuvant pertuzumab and trastuzumab in this patient population?
The dual HER2 blockade is based on two sets of data. There's a number of neoadjuvant trials that demonstrated a benefit from dual HER2 blockade given to patients in combination with neoadjuvant chemotherapy. And there's the Affinity trial that looked into the outcome of patients that primary surgery and then received adjuvant trastuzumab and pertuzumab compared to trastuzumab alone. And in that latter trial, we only saw a significant benefit in patients with no positive disease. That's why adjuvant therapy with trastuzumab and pertuzumab is generally limited to patients with no positive disease.
What is your go-to frontline regimen for patients with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer?
The treatment landscape for patients with metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer is changing as we speak. For many, many years, the standard treatment is what we call the Cleopatra regimen, so single-agent taxane therapy in combination with dual HER2 blockade, trastuzumab and pertuzumab, provided the patients didn't receive trastuzumab and pertuzumab in the adjuvant setting within a year prior to that. If patients have received, obviously, HER2-targeted therapy within a year prior to recurrence, then we would consider an antibody-drug conjugate T-DM1 or, where available, trastuzumab deruxtecan.
What are your perceptions of the HER2-CLIMB-02 findings that were presented at SABCS 2023, and how might those data influence clinical practice?
The HER2-CLIMB-02 trial is an interesting trial that essentially evaluated whether the addition of a tyrosine kinase inhibitor, a small molecule, tucatinib, to an antibody-drug conjugate T-DM1 improves outcomes in patients who have already had prior therapy for HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer. A large percentage of these patients have brain metastasis, so it's a selected group of patients, and that was based around the observation that tucatinib passes the blood-brain barrier very well and therefore may have an increased efficacy in patients with brain metastasis. Ultimately, it's a positive trial in terms of progression-free survival. Overall survival data are so far not positive. And it shows, in my opinion, a modest benefit from adding tucatinib to T-DM1, again, improving the hypothesis that tackling HER2 at different levels in this group of patients, especially in those with brain metastasis, may be beneficial. Overall, these data obviously have to be seen in the wider context of a rapidly changing landscape. And for example, we also have data with trastuzumab deruxtecan, an antibody drug conjugate, in a second and a third line setting where it shows substantially higher efficacy compared to standard treatment, including T-DM1. We've also seen pooled analysis data for trastuzumab deruxtecan in patients with brain metastasis, confirming that this drug also has activity in brain metastasis. So taking all of this into consideration, it just confirms that tucatinib is an effective treatment in patients with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer. It has good blood-brain barrier penetrance, has good activity in patients with brain metastasis. In terms of where this best fits in before or after trastuzumab deruxtecan is a much wider discussion.
So how do you typically treat patients with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer in the second-line setting?
The second-line treatment for HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer is obviously dependent on what we give in the first-line setting. In patients who would have received the Cleopatra regimen, so taxane in combination with dual HER2 blockade, most oncologists probably would lean towards trastuzumab deruxtecan as a next treatment step, especially in patients who haven't got active brain metastasis. This is based on randomized trials showing that trastuzumab deruxtecan, the novel antibody-drug conjugate, has substantially increased efficacy compared to T-DM1 or to compare to other HER2-targeted therapies. And some of the treatment guidelines say we should make a difference possibly between patients with brain metastasis and patients without brain metastasis. In patients with brain metastasis, for example, consider a combination with tucatinib. Having said that, with the more recent data confirming substantial activity of trastuzumab deruxtecan in patients with or without brain metastasis, my personal preference will be to consider trastuzumab deruxtecan as a second-line treatment option.
What standard of care options exist for patients with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer in the third-line setting and beyond?
It's a really interesting question. What do we do after second-line treatment, especially if you have used trastuzumab deruxtecan there? If you haven't used trastuzumab deruxtecan in the first or second-line setting, then it is obviously, again, the preferred option as a third-line therapy based on the superior efficacy in phase 3 trials, provided there are no contraindications. If trastuzumab deruxtecan was used in a second-line or possibly even first-line setting, but we're probably in a data-free zone. There's very little data out there about what is the optimal treatment after trastuzumab deruxtecan. There are small study sets coming through showing that other treatments can be effective. And ultimately, I would still consider further HER2-targeted therapy. We obviously have the option of offering patients T-DM1. We have the option of offering patients a combination with trastuzumab and tucatinib. And often that is combined with chemotherapy, for example, capecitabine, trastuzumab, tucatinib. And the picture is slightly less clear. There's a number of new antibody drug conjugates that are currently being investigated in that space as well. It will be interesting to see whether those ADCs provide substantial activity after prior treatment with trastuzumab deruxtecan.
And I know you said there's not a lot of data in this space, but are there any emerging data that might further guide the use of ADCs in this setting?
I think we're learning a lot about how to use ADCs in general, whether it's in HER2-positive disease or whether it's outside HER2-positive disease. One of the interesting features is how resistance develops to antibody drug conjugates. And it is becoming increasingly clear that this can be subclonal. So not all sites of metastatic disease will develop the same mechanisms of resistance at the same time. This brings a feature more into focus of attention, which we call an oligoprogression, which means if a patient, for example, has 10 sites of metastatic disease and 9 of them remain stable, but one of them is growing, that's what we would describe as oligoprogressive disease. And so we're increasingly learning that this can be a feature where we then combine local therapy by keeping the systemic therapy in there. For me, that's one of the learnings from ADC. It's also learning how we best sequence ADCs and how we best manage the side effect profile from ADCs. If you look at the very early trials we had with antibody drug conjugates, there was significant toxicity, but some of that was down to us as clinicians not being used to manage those side effects optimally. With more experience, for example, with trastuzumab deruxtecan, but also other ADCs such as sacituzumab govitecan, we have learned to manage, for example, nausea better or diarrhea better or prevent ILD or detect ILD at an earlier stage. So I think that is also a learning out of San Antonio and other meetings that the better we get as clinical teams at detecting and managing those side effects, the better the benefit for patients will be.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by Genentech. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.